When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello again, Jordan here with On Mic with Jordan Rich, and today another treat for me, and I know it'll be a treat for you. My guest is Ed Crasnick, Emmy-winning writer. He's an actor. He's a stand-up comic. You may have seen him on shows such as The Sopranos, Hot in Cleveland, Curb Your Enthusiasm, Just Shoot Me, Ellen, Dr. Katz, Conan, Whose Line Is It Anyway? Just a number of TV appearances. Recently, Ed worked with Judd Apatow on the HBO series Crashing. I've known this gentleman since we were both in high school, a couple of comedy fans who really love to do impressions and tell jokes and get people to laugh. Eddie made it his career, and he continues to do it so well on the West Coast and around the country. Along with all the TV and radio appearances, he's also been involved in podcasting for a while, and we're going to be talking about a new podcast that's really taking off called Dear Anxiety, which is having a lot of positive impact. So without further ado, my discussion with an old friend, a very funny and a very lovely guy, Mr. Ed Crasnick. Love doing this podcast because it's reunion time once again. An old, old friend and a dear friend, Ed Crasnick, joins us. How are you?
I'm good. When you say old, it used to be that it was sort of like a manner of speaking. But now, when you say old, you really are talking old.
I'm looking at a
fossil. that actually looks brand new when it stands next to me.
Well, we have weathered many years separately, actually, on different coasts, but have stayed in touch. First of all, I'm so proud of you, and I mean that in every sense of the word, because of your success and the creative work you've been doing in comedy and theater and elsewhere, which we'll talk about. Are you at a place now that you're saying, this is kind of a good place to be after all these years?
Well, the thing is that's really good is that you finally get a sense of, what it is that I love to do and what it is that I want to do and what it is that I do best. And those are the things that it takes a long time to figure out. And I think that learning that the things that you love the most are the things to follow. And for a long time, it feels like, is it okay for me to do this? Is it okay for me to, I think I spent a lot of time surviving, and that's what people try to do. It's like you survive in show business, and then you forget why it is you wanted to do it. You keep coming back to it, and it really is stuff. Now, Jordan and I have known each other since we were kids, since we were in grade school. And so I'm going to say for myself, the things that I loved back then are the things that I still love and the things that make me want to be in an expressive business, expressive art form, like comedy and writing and hosting and doing things like that. And I'm going to guess that it's the same for you.
Absolutely. The imprint happened early on, and you and I discovered each other and became friends because we shared a love of things humorous and creative people. And we're dating ourselves now. We used to memorize comedy albums, those round black things that spin around. They're hot again now, by the way. I was thinking right off the bat of your one-man show that I loved, and I saw it so many years ago, of course, but it's called I'm Not Perfect, and I think even now it sums up the path that you've taken. It's autobiographical. Talk a little bit about that show.
Well, I grew up like you did around three generations around. It's different than today, for people listening. I mean, it was very common for people to have their grandparents and aunts and uncles and people who were living near you. And so that's how I grew up in Dorchester in the 60s and early 70s of three generations of a Jewish family trying to live together. And there were pluses and minuses of that. But the good news, and something that we miss today, is that there was a sense of community, and the community happened around the kitchen table where there was lots of food and lots of loudness and lots of crazy characters who were basically telling stories about their day or something that happened to them that week. But they were very good storytellers. They were just natural storytellers. And that's where I felt I belonged, at that table, even though they may have been telling stories about, you know, a frustration or a tuna sandwich that they had in 1946. Either one was fine, and either one was really entertaining. And even for a little kid at the age of two or three, you start to get a sense of, you know, this is community. It's being brought together by stories and funny people. Funny people talking about their issues, the things that cause them, you know, problems. And that's what I grew up doing. And so that's what I grew up, you know, being most used to. And that's why I went into stand-up.
Of course, in the show, I'm Not Perfect, you also reference the impact of, say, Ed Sullivan on your early years and on your development. I think that's what makes you and people like you so funny and so, shall we say, adept at humor, because you were able to witness the greats that came before us.
The thing is, when the family changes around entertainment, and around watching a show like the Ed Sullivan Show, which was a real quintessential variety show of television, and he, even though he was, you know, a strange person, he hosted this show where they really did try to have everything for every member of the family. They had a rock act for the kids. They had an opera singer for the parents. They had a bear act for people who liked bears. Mm. But they had crazy acts. And for me, like growing up and watching the Beatles or the Rolling Stones or the Doors, and my sister, too, who was 7 years older than myself, it brought us together. It brought us to life. Because when people are watching the entertainers live, and I say when they're watching them live, there is something that brings you to life. Mm-hmm. And so it was a real, you know, unifying thing for me. And it was also just like, this is where I belong. Like, mm-hmm. This is what I want to do. And I was talking about this to someone, and I talked about this in the show. For me, the Ed Sullivan Show was seminal for a couple of reasons. One, it brought my family together on Sunday night. Mm-hmm. We were all together. Two, it had an act called the plate spinner. And the plate spinner was a guy who spun plates on long rods. And if you have never seen this, you can go on YouTube and just put the plate spinner. It was a kind of an act, and it was called the plate spinning act. And this guy came out and he spun plates. And then years later, after being through a lot of therapy, I learned that this idea of trying to spin plates in your life, yes, emotionally.
Yes.
And so I use that in the show, watching the Ed Sullivan Show and then realizing that I was a plate spinner, but I was an emotional plate spinner. I didn't want to let people fall. And so I was a people pleaser, and like a lot of people. I mean, this is not particular to me at all, but the idea of the plate spinner. So we started putting a show together, a solo show, and we toured around the country for almost 5 years, mm-hmm, and did it everywhere. Theaters, community centers, schools, you name it, a pilot. We did all those things.
Have you thought about doing an updated I'm Not Perfect with where we are today?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I might. It's a good idea. I really always wanted to do it as a kind of Wonder Years TV show. I wanted to do it with a guy who's trying to bring up his own family, and he keeps going back to these moments, these pivotal moments. And for a while, I wrote this pilot called Both Sides Now, and it was about a guy who was trying to be kind of host his own life. He was the stage manager of his own life, and it was sort of like Our Town meets Defending Your Life. And he could see, you know, like while trying to raise his teenage daughter, he would look and he would see, you know, him in a car going off to college with his parents, and something funny that happened, but poignant that happened, and try to relate it to his own life. So, yeah, I mean, I had another show where I just tried to do it around Ed Sullivan. It was sort of like the old show American Dreams, where the family sort of comes together around this one event, this one thing that happens every Sunday night. But at any rate, yeah, so as far as I'm Not Perfect, that kind of a structure of a show, I haven't really thought about that, but I've tried to do... Yeah, I've tried to think of things that could be shows that come from it, from that idea.
comedy is such a broad plane with a swath of possibilities. And I think personally, as a fan, there's so much more on the comedy palette today. What's the state of comedy? I know this is a broad question here, but in your estimation, since you're in it every day and have been in it for years, give us a state of the union, if you will.
It's you know, what's happened through podcasting, through what you're doing right now, what your show is doing, it's come back to comedians speaking very personally to their audience. It's almost like what happened in the a long time ago when Mort Saul came into comedy and started changing the one-line joke teller into somebody who talks more personally and also talks more personally about politics and about things that are going on in the world. And that happened in the late 50s and early 60s. Comedians used to come in a coat and tie. And then through Lenny Bruce and Mort Saul and people like that, they started to comment on the world in a different way. And it wasn't jokes. It was about who are you as a person. Well, now it's about who are you as a person, not only that, but who are you in your personal life? And what struggles do you have? And how do you make that into comedy? And so that's what podcasting has become. It's a completely personal experience. Mark Maron, who's a guy, you know, who I did stand up with for many years, remember hanging out with him at Catch a Rising Star in Boston. You know, he goes off and he does these interviews out of his garage. And all of a sudden, and you can't believe that this has happened, but it did happen. All of a sudden, Obama is coming to his garage.
Yeah.
And it wasn't all of a sudden. It was over a period of years. But Obama's coming to you. The president of the United States is coming to your garage. And it's not an easy garage to get to. And you're wondering, how is this happening? Well, he started speaking very personally about what was going on with him. And, you know, so comedy that way, it's more about mental health. It's more about, you know, who am I as a person and how do I make that into comedy? And then people are all over the country are going into comedy classes and they want to find out, you know, how to transform, you know, Mrs. Maisel, how to transform their own life experiences into stand-up. And like the Mrs. Maisel show on Amazon is a marvelous Mrs. Maisel. And so, so I think it's become really personal, the state of comedy.
No, I was just going to say, finish your thought, but I've got a great segue based on what you're saying and a question about something you're doing now, but go ahead, finish.
Well, yeah, that's when I realized I was saying before, you know, how to be who you are and bring that into your comedy and learning about what you do. Well, I did a lot of therapy and I did a lot of self exploration, and some of it was for things that I was experiencing, and some of it was that it was my own life. And so I realized that there was a union of that kind of work and comedy, and I started calling it self help comedy, and now you might call it transformational comedy. And we do a show every week, and it's about the union of mental health and comedy, wellness, well-being, emotional fitness, and comedy. And humor and emotion, that when you bring those two worlds together, and then you teach people things that they can do in their everyday life, practices to help them live easier, live happier, be well, and you have comedians deliver the message, that's what I want to do. I mean, that's my whole world.
Leaving the world not just a happier place, but maybe a more balanced place. That brings me to the segue to Dear Anxiety, a relatively new podcast that you're doing with another very fine individual, how you describe it. What I love about this is it's real, as is just about everything you do professionally. It's you. It's real. Talk about Dear Anxiety and share that with us.
Well, there's a lady that I met years ago. Her name is Renee Jane, and she is an expert in applied positive psychology. And what applied positive psychology, she has a business called GoZen, GoZen.com, where she helps all kinds of people, kids, parents. It's in 2,500 schools around the country. And what it is it's a program that teaches resilience skills. It teaches anxiety relief. It teaches how to stress better. It teaches anger transformation. It teaches how to deal with thoughts and feelings. And that's what we have going on. That's basically what our, part of what our lives is about. We know what physical fitness is. We don't know what emotional fitness is. So she started doing this company, and it was, she started using animation to teach parents and kids how to, how to use these science-based skills, because it's really the science of happiness, the science of wellness. What happened years ago is that these psychologists, these social scientists, they tried to study depression, and because they wanted to figure out how to cure depression, and they studied it for many years. And what happened was they weren't getting a cure. They weren't being successful. And the reason why they weren't being successful is because they were studying the wrong thing. They weren't studying what makes people well. They were studying what makes people depressed. So they started to study what makes people well. And then they scientifically studied it. And then they came up with interventions to help people be well. What is it that makes people well? And so they founded a field called Applied Positive Psychology. And it happened out of the University of Pennsylvania. And this woman, who I work with, studied with the father of applied positive psychology, Marty Seligman. And so we do this podcast together on iTunes called Dear Anxiety, and it's on Stitcher. It's wherever you get podcasts. It's every week. We look at different topics. Today, we're going to do something on overwhelm. We've had procrastination. We've had anger. We've had depression. We've had any issue you can think of, any life issue.
You guys have a very good chemistry, too, I must say. And I do a lot of this kind of stuff, and I really enjoy the banter and what you bring to it as sort of us. You're the public. You're the people out there, and you share with your audience about yourself. I think it's great.
Oh, thanks. Yeah. Well, we're learning, and it's a good show. I mean, what's happening is that we're talking about your personal lives. Everybody is the same. When it comes to mental health, we're all children. No one is a real expert, and it's a new practice for people. And part of it, and you've known this, in your own life, is to start to become aware of what you're doing and what you're saying to yourself and what you're thinking so that you can make choices about how to do it so that it serves you better.
I love the concept, and I love the fact that it's taking off, and not only you, but others are starting to get the message. We have a few minutes left before you have to run along, and you've worked with amazing people, and you've gotten to hang out with everyone from Larry David to Tony Soprano. Is it still a kick for you to get involved with somebody you might have watched on television as a youngster or somebody you might have idolized? And if so, who's in the spotlight these days? Who are you working with that's really turning you on?
Well, I tell you, it is. It always is. And then what happens is you think, wow, I'm going to be really intimidated by this person. And what happens is you actually start to feel really comfortable because the people that you love the most, you love them for a reason. And then you find out who they are, as a person. And then you start to realize they're people, and they have a lot of the same loves and interests and things that they care about that you do. They're really not different. And it really lets them off the hook and lets them be who they are when you just start talking to them like people. And even though there's this excitement, you realize, when you're talking to Lily Tomlin and you're hanging out with her, you realize she's a person.
Right.
and she's full of life and, can talk about so many things in such a great way. The person that I'm trying to sort of reconnect with is David Chase, who created The Sopranos. He has a film coming out that's a prequel to The Sopranos, and he's doing it right now. And I used to be friends with David Chase, and that's how I got on the show. And David is a huge fan of comedy and very astute about comedy and loves comedy. So we used to talk about the Ed Sullivan Show all the time. So he was creating a show years ago with Mark Helgenberger for CBS. It was a small town show, and I was going to be the doctor in the town, but I was going to talk like Ed Sullivan. So that's how we started.
What would the doctor sound like as Ed Sullivan?
Well, come on. Now, you cough. Now, all right. You remind me of Sandler and Young. One sang in French, the other in English, in any language, suckez-vous. It was all right, cough.
Would David Chase then be the appropriate guy to get the I'm Not Perfect movie up and running and produced for widescreen distribution?
Well, you know, I've talked to him about shows. I talked to him about shows a long time ago, but I have other things that I, you know, that I want to talk about. I want to figure out how to do this guy who is the stage manager of his own life and sort of has these memory flashes. And so that kind of stuff. But I've pitched shows to him a long time ago. But yeah, getting back in touch with a guy like that, and then also Larry David and Mark Maron and people like that. Mm-hmm. We tried to do a show with Bobcat Goldthwait, with a very funny comedian named Eddie Pepitone. And that's a really cool show. The guy was an Uber driver, and he had these flights of fancy that would go on in his head, and they would be sketches, sort of like the old Chappelle show in a way. So we did that, and, you know, trying to connect with him again on another show.
Well, edkrasnick.com is where people can get a beat on what you're up to, which is a lot. So much creative stuff flowing and flowing so beautifully. I want to close out, though, with what I think is on television, your tour de force, or one of them, in a show called Just Shoot Me, when you portrayed, let's put it this way, someone who at least the audience thought, or you thought, or the characters thought, was a rather famous director. You were nominated for an Emmy, if I'm not mistaken, weren't you, for the Woody Allen portrait?
Yeah, I was really lucky. It was great. Steve Levitan, who is the executive producer of Modern Family, wrote a script, and it was based on, I knew the writers on the show, and they were looking for another character, and I did an impression of Woody Allen. I didn't do it in my act, but I always, you know, was inspired by him, as I know you were, and so I did an impression of him for Steve one day, and he 3 months later, I got a script, and the script was an episode about a guy who thought he was Woody Allen, and it was a full. I mean, it was like the script. The show was about this guy, and so Just Shoot Me at the time was a new show, and they were going to be picked up for a second season, and so I went in and I got to be this guy who thought he was Woody Allen. And. And then we sent it to Woody Allen, and Woody Allen actually sent he was going to be on camera. He couldn't make it, but he sent a tape of his voice. And so in one of the scenes, Laura San Giacomo, who played the character of Maya on the show, she answers a phone call, and it's the real Woody Allen. And I'm standing next to her. And so we did the show that way. And we had to listen to Woody Allen try to be Woody Allen because he doesn't really talk like that.
Of course not.
Right? So, so he has, you know, so we get a tape, and the tape is, it sounds like they're saying, okay, is Maya there, please? You're thinking, who is that? And then all of a sudden he goes, okay, you know, is Maya there? Maya Gallo, please? Maya? You know, and all of a sudden it's Woody Allen. That's what we did.
Well, we had numerous hours, we would just talk to you about numerous projects, so many of them, so many great stand-up roles, impressions, acting, writing. But I started this podcast by saying how proud I am to know you're doing so well and how happy I am to remain a lifelong friend of somebody who's so cool and also helping other people. You're the best, man.
Thank you. Thank you. And I'll tell you, it's... I feel the same about you. I'm very proud of the work that you've done in media and radio and what you've done in your life and what you continue to do and how active you are in the business. And I'll tell you, I'm very lucky to have you as a friend.
Well, we have to get together somewhere. Maybe in St. Louis there's a deli. We have to get together somewhere soon, East or West Coast. I'm going to make that happen. Eddie, thank you so much. God bless and continued success.
Pleasure. Thanks, Jordan.
This is Jordan thanking you for listening to On Mic with Jordan Rich, available on Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and of course, Android. Appreciate you subscribing, downloading, rating, and reviewing this podcast if you get a chance. On Mic is produced at Chark Productions in Boston. Until next time, be well so you can do good.
We When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.